Welcome to the first episode of Double Crossed Radio for 2015. And I'm so happy to be here tonight with, along with Drew Lamb. My name is Chuck Horton, and we're bringing you tonight's show. And we're going to be recapping the what we thought are the best shows of 2014. And, you know, this is kind of a humorous story I'm going to share with all of you before we start. We kind of made our list independently, and then we were going over the lists about an hour and a half ago, and almost to a show, we had the same shows on our list. So it was just amazing. I guess we kind of think alike about stuff, I guess. But that, there's a lot of – we had a lot – we were I was kind of impressed by how many shows we had that were I considered really keepers. I mean, really, really, really good stuff, better than most of the stuff I hear on the air anywhere. And I'm not saying that's because it was Drew and I. We had great guests that agreed to come on, and they were very interesting people. And I enjoyed those shows a lot. I enjoyed learning things from these people. It was just really great. Drew, welcome to 2015, not 19. I'm in the 20th century still.
Back to the future.
Back to the future now, yes.
Yeah, it's great to be back on with you. And what are we? We'll be getting into year three pretty soon. With the show. So, yeah, I was looking back on guests that we had, you know, between Double Cross Radio and people that I've had on Off-Grid Journey, too. And, you know, and it was a real pleasure getting to meet and have conversations with just really incredible people, you know, people that I admire.
And I have the same impression. These are people that aren't household names at all, but they're really smart, innovative people.
Yeah, and I like to have discussions with people that I could learn something from or be inspired by. And you know, some of these folks that we've had on, you know, I've just, you know, I feel honored, you know, to have been able to spend time with them. I think, you know, in particular, the interview that we had with Cliven Bundy just blew me away, especially the time that we spent with him after the show.
Yeah.
You know, we talked to him for another 20 or 30 minutes after the show.
I know. The guy, he is, you know, he probably doesn't agree with everything we think about stuff, but he's one of those guys that lives the life that he believes in, and you got to respect that.
Yeah,
and I certainly think we probably are more closely aligned with him than most people.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. We push this. I don't know if it's an agenda, but we definitely push a movement, this anti-state, pro anarcho-capitalism. But at the same time, we also push a message of trying to restore the republic. You know, and to follow the Constitution, and that might be a contradiction. Sounds like it's a contradiction. You know, is that statist of us to say that? You know, the fact that that we support the Oath Keepers is that statist of us? Well, I don't really think so, because the thing is that, you know, I live an ANCAP lifestyle. You know, I am an agorist. You know, I exist in the counter economy as much as possible. But that hasn't gotten rid of the state. The state is still there in my life, sending me mail, sending me junk, wanting things from me, interfering with me, telling me what to do. It's still there, and I want to bind it down. And I'm surrounded by statists, you know, people who still believe in this system, and it's, you know, it's the first step to getting rid of this system is to tie it down as much as possible. And if you could at least get some of the statists on board with that, then you're getting somewhere. You know, you're taking a step toward making sure that the government doesn't trample your rights, you know, and then you start moving in the direction of taking control back, you know, and you're moving in the direction of making the government smaller, giving it less power, giving it less authority,
defunding it,
and that's the path that we have to take, and we have to do this in steps, And so you have to pick and choose your battles. But I prefer to align myself with people that see government as being a problem, and they see, you know, the Constitution as a way to try to deal with that problem. But I don't think that it's the final solution to dealing with the problem of the state.
Yeah, it's not the last step.
No, it isn't. It's not the last step in dealing
with
the state.
We'll have to get to that point before we can go forward.
Right. But in the meantime, we need to align ourselves with these people. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. And it's just, you know, it's one step toward opening up these people's minds as well. Ultimately, people need to realize that the state isn't the solution. You know, the state doesn't do things better. The state only knows violence. You know, this current system that we are under is a system of plunder. You know, this is how Lysander Spooner put it in the 1850s in his book No Treason, is that we have this secret ballot system where people are voting to put somebody into office who they think is not going to plunder them or allow the government to plunder them, but will instead plunder somebody else that they'd like to see plundered. You know, like you might have like one faction that makes steel and another faction that makes automobiles, and you know, and one would like to see no tariffs, you know, and another one would like to see tariffs, you know, one would like to keep their production costs low, and the other would like to eliminate foreign competition, you know. So that's how the government is used, you know. It's a weapon of mass plunder, and that's what we're dealing with. It's, you know, people have this illusion of choice, but it's really taken over by the corporations who are just trying to avoid plunder and seek to plunder others for their own benefit.
Yeah, we covered this subject in the first year when we talked about that book about Alexander Hamilton. It was written by Thomas DiLorenzo. I think it's called Hamilton's Revenge or Hamilton. Someone can post it in the notes for the show. But that's exactly the whole point, is that Hamilton really was a statist. He believed there was he wanted George Washington to be king. He thought that you should have this one person who was the absolute authority, and that was kind of his normalcy bias, I guess. He was very much an advocate for a central bank. The first bank in the United States was a dismal failure, as is the Federal Reserve. But he still kept promoting it, and even after his death from his grave, he had people that were his, he had mentored, that continued on this philosophy, and it actually in the 19th century, that was the philosophy of the Republican Party. It was led by, it was started by the great compromiser, it was a congressman from Kentucky, who was also known as the Hemp King. I forget his name too. I wasn't prepared for this. Henry Clay. And anyway, that Henry Clay was the mentor to Abraham Lincoln, and the Republican Party was born out of that. And they basically adopted a economic system was identical to the one they had fought the revolution to, you know, get out from under the thumb of. So they created the same problem that the revolution had separated them from. The Constitution was really lost in the 19th century.
So we see these guys like Clive and Bundy, and guys like Tony Intiso, who's been pushing for the Jefferson Republic and now the Siskiyou Republic. You know, these guys are constitutionalists. They want to restore the Constitution, want to create a constitutional republic, you know, and put the power back into the hands of the people, and take it away from the corporations, and the lobbyists, military industrial complex, and whatnot that are currently dominating these states right now, and you know, and that's been the goal of our show was to push for a true sovereign nation state, You know, that's what Double Cross Radio was all about. And we thought that we could do that through the State of Jefferson movement. But I had this you know, problem. I was this cognitive dissonance. You know, I'm like, well, wait, we're just creating a new state. How is that going to change anything? We're still part of this corrupt system, this illegitimate government. And when we
have a bigger problem in D.C. than we have in Sacramento or Salem.
Yes, Kevin G put up one of the videos of Tony and Tiso giving a presentation about the Jefferson Republic, and it just clicked. I'm like, yes, this is it. And if you're an anarchist, you need to understand how important something like this is, because you might want to live the life of an anarcho-capitalist, but you're doing so within these borders, and you've got status all around you, and cops on the streets that, you know, that might arrest you for whatever. And what we need to do is carve out a little place where we can be free, you know. And so that's why we have to have some sort of nation, you know, where we could live and be free, and basically, you know, go, okay, this is how things are right here, and you can't, you know, reach in and take money out of our bank accounts. You know, you can't tell us what to do. These are the rules within our society and our economy. And so I see this, you know, as a solution. You know, and other solutions
I think it's a great solution.
Right, I do too. And we've been looking at other solutions, you know, that other people have proposed. You know, like Jeff Berwick's Galt's Gulch, Chile. And then we see some of these guys doing these seasteading projects, which I'm very fascinated with. And so there's several different models there, you know, because it is difficult to try to basically, you know, straddle both worlds, you know, where you're trying to be free, live your life as you want, and you're living within a country and surrounded by people who don't believe in that. But
you got to know it's possible, because here you have, and we use, this is part of one of our shows dealing with this year, the kind of the city state of Hong Kong, which is part of communist China, is one of the freest places on the planet. So it's possible. If it's possible for Hong Kong to exist, it's possible for us to have something like that within the boundaries of the United States.
Yeah, completely. It is, and as Tony and Tiso put it, you know, it's about doing away with the illegitimate, you know, United States corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Doing away with that. You know, we've been under Federal Reserve rule for over 100 years. And this is another thing that I want to get to. I don't want to get off topic here with the review of our shows, but we are constantly presented with this argument from people who support the status system that want an example, you know, like show us how an anarcho-capitalist society has succeeded. And I don't get this, because why should I have to present that? Why should I have to show proof of something when you're supporting a system that has failed over and over and over and over again?
It's a proven failure, yeah.
It's a proven failure. Why are you supporting this? I don't have to prove
something.
That,
why don't we try something new?
You don't have the guts to try something new? You've got this system that's a complete disaster. It's, I mean, literally, I mean, we're going to hell in a handbasket. And you're afraid to try something different? There's really nothing to be afraid of here.
And
you don't have to look at like an entire country or something like that. All you have to do is look at like certain markets and how they function, and you go, oh, well that works quite well. Or you could just, you know, like that presentation that our friend Phil Elcock, a guest on our show, gave it at one of the State of Jefferson meetings. You know, about spontaneous organization,
yeah.
And showed a video of a busy automobile intersection without any traffic signals, and
electricity things had gone out.
Yeah, and it was more it was safer and orderly and functioned better than it did when the lights were on.
And there was less of a line behind in any lane going any direction than there were when the lights were functioning.
Yeah, the queue was shorter.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, spontaneous organization, the way that natural systems work, you know, that's the example. You know, nature is an example.
And a lot of the things we do in our societies are like traffic lights and stop signs. They impede progress. They don't promote it. And so we're not doing things the best way because we're not letting the market create the way. We're going by one or two people who think they know everything.
Right. Earlier this year, we had the episode that was leading up to the vote for the big ban on genetically modified organisms.
Yeah, that was a good show.
In Jackson County, and we had several guests on that show. It was incredible because it could have been a huge disaster. I think there was five of us on the line. On the line. So is you and myself, Eric Dubin, Kevin G,
mm-hmm. Dennis was on.
Dennis Linthicum, Vigo Fox, I believe,
yes,
was on that episode too, and we were discussing this, and
I think Colby was on that one too.
I think Colby Olson was there too. And you know, you and I, you know, have been in the minority on this, you know, in Jackson County, where we are anti-GMO. However, we were against the ban as well, and we were pushing for a free market solution. And we've been trying to explain to people that there would be unintended consequences that would be incurred if this was passed. And of course it passed, and recently
we were proven right.
There's been a couple of lawsuits filed in against Jackson County by a couple of alfalfa farmers, and they raised GMO alfalfa. And you know, and I'm not condoning this, but the thing is that Their GMO crops haven't infiltrated anybody else's crops in this valley. Nobody's complained. There's no issues with anybody. They haven't proven to be bad neighbors. They planted these crops, you know, already. They have millions of dollars invested in these crops. They were put in before the ban. And so basically, what we're looking at is a taking without compensation. You know, a taking of their property without compensation. And there's no case for any harm that's been done to anybody. There's no victim whatsoever.
Well, there may be, but they haven't proven their case, and that's something that should be done in court. If there's a victim, he should have the ability through litigation to be compensated as well.
Well, the biggest cultivator of GMO crops in Jackson County has been Syngenta, and they lease several fields around the valley. A lot of them are in Ashland and within spitting distance of organic crops. And in one case, their GMO sugar beets had cross-pollinated with an organic farmer's Swiss chard and ruined his crops. He approached them and said, "Hey, you wrecked my crops. We have a problem here." And they settled. They dealt with this. That was the whole thing. And you know, and we know how free markets work. You know, if these guys are going to get sued, you know, or have claims made against them by other farmers, well, you know, it's going to prove to be pretty unprofitable to continue doing business like that. So they're going to change their crops, or they're going to change the way that they grow the crops. Like they'll grow them only indoors or something like that, you know, and use systems to contain and process the air before it's vented outside, and so that they don't contaminate anybody else's crops with their pollen. You know, those are the kinds of solutions.
And I want to just interrupt for a second. This is not unique in history. During the 19th century, when the railroads were being put everywhere, they would occasionally catch farmers' fields on fire when they're going through. They were burning coal and everything. They'd have sparks going up, and it would cause problems. And so the farmers were pretty much upset about it, as you see. And the railroads said, "Well, we're not doing anything." And then they were, "Oh, wait a minute, we are." And so they settled. The farmers agreed not to grow their crops right up to the rail line, and the railroads paid them for the crops that they didn't plant. And they settled it without government.
Right. Now, this kind of stuff should be settled without government. And we can see how already the majority has you know, ruined the businesses of a minority for no reason whatsoever. You know,
well, and also the people that are going to be paying the biggest price are the taxpayers of Jackson County.
Exactly. You and I didn't support this. We were completely against it. Our property taxes went up 17% last year for bunches of other stuff that we didn't support.
They're going to go up again.
And for services we don't even use. And they're going to go up again. And then there will be a bill, you know, tacked onto this. And we'll end up having to chip in and pay for that as well. It's completely unfair. You know?
And as a trustee of a trust that is a major real estate holder in this valley, it's going to cost us a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a guy in the valley here who owns apartments, and he's the largest taxpayer in Jackson County. And I don't think it has anything to do with farming. He owns more property than even Harry and David. And he'll foot most of the bill, being the biggest taxpayer.
Yeah.
And he is far removed from this whole thing. It's absolutely unfair.
I think our trust is in the top five.
But you guys own a lot of property. But all I can say is that Chuck and I told you so.
Yep.
We knew this was going to happen. We warned everybody. And,
you know, there's a few things that we predicted haven't happened yet, but they're still moving in that direction. But we haven't been wrong yet.
Yeah.
Well, I should say we did have one thing that didn't quite turn out.
Well, I think you know, Bitcoin isn't going in the direction we'd predict at the moment.
I think it is. I think the long-term trend is up. It just I think speculators kept pushing the price up above what was reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And the market brings it back down to reality. The base statistics are there's more and more people every year that are accepting Bitcoin, so it's being used more. And there's going to be more and more demand for it because it has have great utility as people start to get to use it. There's still only a small fraction of the world population even understands how it works. And
there's a lot of, I guess I'll call them tools within the Bitcoin.
Just think of this. There's only 21 million of them are ever going to be made.
Yeah.
Just to own one Bitcoin could be worth a fortune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's only what $300 and change or something.
Yeah, that still looks to me like it's a great buy right now. I mean, I wouldn't take food off the table to buy it, but if you had an extra $300, that's probably about as good a use as any.
Yeah, but it isn't just a form of currency. It's also like an operating system for various mm-hmm. transactions. You know, all kinds of things from real estate deals to stock offerings. You know, it's those kinds of things can be implemented through the Bitcoin code.
Yeah, and for us, if we want to, we have my wife's family still lives in Poland, and if we want to send money there, let's say we want to send $100 to there, it costs us $8 to do it. Mm-hmm. So that's 8% fee,
right?
If you do it in Bitcoin, it costs you like a less than 1% fee.
Yeah, or nothing even.
I think there still is a slight fee because there's a. It's not much. It'd be a couple bucks.
Well,
No, it wouldn't even be that much. It'd be less than a dollar.
Well, if you had the address for my Bitcoin wallet,
cost is going to be turning it dollars into Bitcoin and Bitcoin back into in Poland Bezwolte. That's would be the only place would be costs.
Yeah.
The actual transfer from here to there is nothing.
Because I have my Bitcoin wallet. It's the blockchain. Wallet, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's free. It's free. You just put, you know, it's not an exchange. You know, it's just a wallet.
That was another one of our good shows this year. Was
right.
Sam Price.
Yeah,
it's amazing. We have a man living here in Medford who really knows as much as he does about Bitcoin. He's explained it so well, and he's had two years, two shows. We're gonna have to have him back this year again to update us on Bitcoins. He's an amazing individual. I really enjoy Sam.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's definitely some local talent here. We've had Greg Askins on the show.
Yep.
Several times. His family owns the health food store, Health Food Mart in Medford.
It's in the Winco Shopping Center. For those of you who have trouble finding it, you just drive around, you see the Guns R Us store, and if you get park in front of that store, you're real close. You just walk up and down in front of those stores there, and you'll run into it. It's right between the Guns R Us and the...
And the porn store.
No, the porn store's way off behind everything. There's a salon, I think, right next to them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Greg's been a great guest to have on. Yeah, and talk about
this show on aspartame. Yeah. He had so much great information on that.
That's some nasty stuff.
It is.
I haven't had a diet drink in years. I used to drink Diet Coke occasionally, but you know, I haven't had. I don't even drink soda pop anymore of any kind, or soda pop, whatever you call it.
Well, I'll drink it if it still has real sugar in it.
I'll drink it if it has alcohol in it.
That works. Yeah, Greg is an amazing resource, and he's going to continue to be on the show, I'd say, three or four times in 2015. We have a show we're planning on glyphosates. It's coming up, I don't know, probably in February. And we'll be going on with more things that are related to health and welfare and, you know, staying healthy and active. And I tell you, he's a fabulous resource for people in this valley. They're kind of limited what they can say because they're not doctors. They're not licensed, quote unquote, by the state. So the information that they have about what's effective can only be said in kind of an ambiguous manner, so they can't be sued or accused of practicing medicine without a license. I mean, like, This kind of borders on ridiculousness. You know, doctors are responsible for the death of hundreds of thousands of people every year in this country, but somebody tells somebody that if you take this supplement, it'll help you with your joint pain. that's called quackery.
in a free market, you're going to have some snake oil salesman.
Yeah.
It's just going to happen.
I was going to say something. You were just on a roll, so I just kept quiet, bit my lip. But when we had Clive and Bundy on, I just was amazed at how that came about. Our show theme song, so a lot of people like it. I love that song.
Yeah, you too. Page. Yeah, listen.
That came about, this is a long story, but one of my Facebook friends from the Ron Paul days was a lady named Joan Lewis, who lives down in Phoenix, Arizona. She happens to be the godmother of some of Jordan Page's children.
Oh.
And she was mentioning that she was going to have dinner with Jordan and or something like that. And I says, is this name dropping or what is this? And then she sent me a private message. So I was kind of teasing her about that. And she says, no, Jordan's been, I used to live, in his, just down the street, and we're very close to his family. He's just an awesome kid. And she's godmother of his children. And says, wow, do you think he'd want to come on our show? And she said, oh, I'm sure he would. He loves stuff like this. And then she hooked us up together, and I got to talk to Jordan a little bit. What an amazing man he is. And we liked him so much, we wanted to have that theme song because it fits our show so perfect.
Yeah.
And she's also the person that put us in touch with Clive and Bundy. So, Joan Lewis, thank you so much for all you have done for us. You are truly a saint.
It's a really, really good connection there.
It is. She's an amazing woman. She's very, 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 very talented. She's got great organizational skills. She's doing a great job down there in Arizona area. She's mm-hmm. there in that part of Arizona. It's real close to Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm. Another regular guest that we've had on our show is Gary Lake, who's mm-hmm. worked with Tony and Tiso on the Jefferson Republic movement and now the Siskiyou Republic movement. And, and Gary and I have worked, very, very closely together on all this and promoting it and then putting together that big Jefferson Republic Liberty concert that we did.
Mm-hmm.
That was in March, huh?
That was fun, and, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we got to get going with stuff again because this is going to be up for a vote in June for the Siski Republic.
I was considering using that picture that was taken of the four of us with our arms crossed or double crossed.
Oh, yeah.
Making that my Christmas card.
Yeah, me and David and Jordan Page.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Gary's been on the show several times, and it's and also when I filled in for Bob Tuscan on the Bob Tuscan show, I invited Gary and Vigo to come on and talk about the Jefferson Republic and have Vigo discuss anarchy and voluntarism and philosophy. You know, it was, you know, those guys are just great. You know, this, I love having those guys on the show. And that just reminds me, you know, I mean, we really had a busy year. We had this deal going on in Ashland, Oregon, where, you know, a bunch of uppity people decided that they wanted to rein in our Second Amendment rights, you know, our right to keep and bear arms, and create a bunch of new laws that governed open carry and how you store your firearms and things like that. And it was really, I mean, it was bad enough that it was definitely going to affect me personally. I mean, to the point where I was going to have to, you know, be a criminal, because, I mean, what they were trying to impose upon us were things that were not acceptable, like banning loaded open carry. That's completely unacceptable. You know, nobody who carries a firearm is ever going to go along with something like that. It's absolutely ridiculous. And
if they do, they're just a target for the criminals who always disobey laws.
Right. And
that's,
I mean,
why they're criminals.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't want to carry leaded, fine. I mean, you could make that choice for yourself, whatever you want to do. But for the government to say you can or cannot do this, I mean, it's a violation of your natural right to self-defense. And we also have, you know, state and U.S. federal amendments to the Constitution that remind the government of these natural rights. And so there were many of us that were just absolutely against this, because it was going to affect us. And I would rather not you know, have to worry about breaking laws like that. You know, it was just something where it's like, you are putting me in danger. I, you know, there's, you know, when I'm leaving my shop at night, it's oftentimes it's dark. I've had people standing in the shadows around my building that shouldn't be there. And it's very, very important that I have a firearm. And so I, you know, Vigo formed this organization called Liberty Ashland, and rallied really, really hard against these laws. And a lot of us pitched in on this. You know, Colby Olson was involved, and Bruce Cook, and David Kirk West, and Warren Druin, and so many of us. I know I'm missing people. I'm sorry, but so many of us were
involved.
There
was a huge turnout
in pushing against this, and a lot of folks showed up at the city council meetings. And spoke to the city council to explain to them how ridiculous this was. I think Vigo Fox's and Bruce Cook's presentations were excellent. Just you know, Vigo just parodied them. He made a joke of the whole thing. He made up an organization, a fake organization called People for a Really, Really, Really Safe Ashland, or something like that. And he was pushing for the banning of kitchen knives and scissors and things. It was a joke, but he wanted to illustrate how ridiculous
can openers.
Yeah, these laws were. And then we had a big
baseball bats.
Yeah, we had a big open carry barbecue up in Lithia Park. And you know, even the chief of police showed up, and there was, I mean, we had a really big turnout for that. It was amazing. And then we walked down to the plaza and open carried on the plaza, and, you know, and many of us, myself included, were carrying rifles, not because we want to be able to walk around downtown with rifles. That's pretty unnecessary, ridiculous for the most part. And you make people's attention in the open carry. So that's That's what we did, and we got our point across, and no new laws were passed and infringed upon our rights. And it just goes to show how activism works. You know, being engaged in your local government is so absolutely important, and standing up for your rights when people are trying, when you've got a group of people trying to take them away, you absolutely have to get involved. You can't just let it happen, and it makes a huge difference.
I also want to make one point. There's some of the people that live in Ashland, really, they're kind of worried and scared about guns, and that's their right. They can be worried and scared, but they don't have the right to take away someone's ability to defend their own life. And that's what they have to understand is, you know, we don't care what your opinion is. You can't put other people's lives in jeopardy in order to make you feel safer. Because first of all, you're not going to be safer, but it's immoral.
Yeah.
That's worse than taxation.
And I should point out too that Bill Meyer was there as well. From Minor Dave is in the chat, reminded me of that. And Minor Dave, what a huge source of inspiration he has been. He's been a regular on our show, and Minor Dave is
another local talent.
Yeah, he's like family to me. Like a brother, I think. But it's been amazing having him on, and here's somebody who really, really, truly understands what freedom is about and is trying to create a place where he can be free, you know, on his mining claim. And so it's been great to hear about his case against the government. You know, they won't allow him on his mining claim right now, and they've breached.
And they're actually supposed to be the government is supposed to be acting like a trustee. They're supposed
exactly.
to be his. They're supposed to be his advocate,
right.
And they're working against him, which
yeah,
is
it's
totally
a breach of
totally
trust,
malfeasance of breach of trust and malfeasance of office. It's they should be in prison.
Yeah, they should. And he keeps pushing, and he will prevail. You know, Dave Everest. He's going to keep going. He's not going to give up.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll definitely be back on the show. And it was great. I had him on Off Grid Journey too, and we talked about staking out a claim as a possible bug out strategy. And that was one of my favorite shows. Actually, I got a lot of good feedback on that show too.
And you know, that was
great.
That tied in really, really well with one of the real popular movements in the Western states that was started by the people out there in Utah. The we had Ray and Loma on talking about this.
What was going on in Apache County with the
Lewis brought that up too. It's the
The U.S. Forest Service mismanaging their forests, and they had these devastating fires. And they said, "Forget it, we're taking our forests back, and we're going to manage our forests, not you." And I think they even charged them for some of the work they had to do in there. They charged the Forest Service.
And they're going through and they're selective cutting, thinning out the forest. When they have fires, they're not so devastating, and they don't destroy the whole ecosystem.
Yeah,
and they put, I don't know, over 1,000 people back to work in the forestry industry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just amazing what could be done if you just decentralize government, take power away from people, have their heads stuck up their ass, and put it in the power in the hands of the people that know what to do with it, and it should be to run their own lives, and they know how to make decisions that are in their best interest, long term even.
Yeah,
they're not that short sighted. When you know, if we cut all the trees down, what are we going to do next year? You know, they understand that.
Yeah, and Loma and Ray have been on the show a couple of times, two or three times. I think three
four
times.
Four times total.
Four times, yeah.
Constitution sheriffs, and they came on again that year. I forgot exactly what they talked about the second time, but then they came on twice last year, I think. They talked about the deal that they had. They put on a deal in Grants Pass, and then they came on earlier in the year. I don't remember. That was with regards to the Jefferson Republic, I believe. One of those shows.
Yeah, I think so. And it's great to have them on. I always like to hear their point of view. And I think don't know, looking at Loma's Facebook post, she's coming around to being an anarchist.
I think she is, yeah. Well, I think they're getting fed up with this. There's a lot of statists that kind of jump on bandwagons, but their support's really, really superficial. I mean, it's and they don't understand the problems that they face at a deep philosophical level. So when, you know, their solution is always we need to pass a law or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah,
instead
exactly.
of we need to get rid of these laws so we can be free of them, and then we'll be able to solve the problems ourselves. Because, you know, you can't put one in terms of the environment in the Siskiyou Mountains, for instance. You can't use the same regulations that work in Yellowstone Park in Siskiyou Mountains. They're different regions. They're different climate zones. Everything about them is different. They have to be managed differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The government has a one policy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and they pretty much neglect the forests, and then we get these devastating fires, and we have miserable summers, and it's bad for our health, and it wipes out tourism. You know, one of the businesses yeah. that my wife and I own is completely dependent upon tourism. And when we have like an August and the valley's filled with smoke, it hurts sales severely. Very bad for business, having your yeah. forests on fire. And it just wastes those resources.
It's not so good for your health either.
Nope. It's pretty bad, actually. I've had a bit of a cough, you know, since the last forest fire. It's not good.
And then this year we had our first two remote broadcasts. We had one from when I went to Freedom Fest in Las Vegas, which any of you out there listening, if you get a chance to attend that, I think there's a big discount on your registration fees if you want to go this next year. I think that their anarcho-capitalist guest list is getting smaller, though, so it might not quite be as exciting as it was when I went, but it's still a good show. It's still an amazing place. But we did one from there, and I did one from a vacation that we took to Playa del Carmen, and that was pretty cool that we can have double cross radio anywhere we are in the world now.
Yeah.
But when I was at the Freedom Fest, I ran into Klamath County Commissioner Dennis Linthicum, and he became a fairly regular guest on the show. He's an amazing resource. What a great mind he is.
So Dennis ran for a representative in Congress 2nd District against mm-hmm. Greg Walden. It was the same position that I ran as a write-in candidate for.
He did a little bit better than you did, though, Drew.
Yeah, he actually tried.
Yeah, and he got 28% of the vote, which was amazing.
Yeah, yeah, well, Dennis would have been great in the position.
So. But Dennis still could still pull it off in this next year, because there's a lot of people that are unhappy that the Republicans have done nothing since they were swept into office.
I didn't really want the position.
Yeah, it would take you away from the farming, so.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I mean, it's like joining the mafia to fight crime or something like that, or going to work at McDonald's to push for healthier food.
or my new career path. But my career path is going to fund liberty, though.
That's using the system against itself.
Yeah. I didn't want it to go to a statist, that's for sure. We also, I was down there at the Freedom Fest, I ran into this booth for a University Francisco Marroquin in Guatemala, and we were able to get the president of that university on as a guest, and he was an amazing individual. It was a fabulous show.
That was Dr. Gabriel Calzada.
Yes, and wow, was that guy? He would be like my next best friend. I'd have to move Drew down a notch. That guy is done everything. I've never run into somebody that had read almost every book I've read that I thought was just incredible. He knew all about the Spanish scholastics, which I think they're the foundation for all the economic truth that we have in the Austrian economics that we talk about on this show. They're the ones that discovered it first and wrote about it. And for some reason, Adam Smith missed a lot of it. And so all this, it's kind of the things that Adam Smith missed, and Adam Smith's theories were still adopted pretty much. It left these loopholes that Marx was able to exploit and get some credibility for his work, which was really a piece of crap. But because Smith had missed those points, it gave him more credibility than he deserved. If you go back to the Spanish Scholastics, you know, there's no way that anything that Marx did could be accepted if you understood what the Spanish Scholastics were standing for. And like the biggest example I can think of is subjective value. They understood it. Adam Smith completely missed it. He thought that the labor that went into building something is what determined what it sold for. And that's absolutely preposterous. Everything has a value, but the value is not by the producer, it's by the consumer. It's subjective. And that explains all these economic theories like supply and demand, marginal utility, and all these different concepts that are out there all flow from subjective value. And you have to understand that really well before you can really understand economics. And mm-hmm. Adam Smith missed it. Mm-hmm. So that was a great show, and I'm sorry for bringing up Dismal Science today. We were doing a review of stuff. But I think this stuff is just fascinating. I'm used to being the kind of a lone wolf on stuff like that. I was also wanting to drop a few more names. We had Justin O'Connell from the Dollar Vigilante in a show along with Elaine Diane Taylor, who wrote a great little song. It's on YouTube. We've posted it several times on our Facebook page. It's a Bitcoin Barbarians, and just genius lyrics in that song. It's just incredibly, incredibly great song. It just puts everything in perspective exactly. That you know, money is money, and you know, Federal Reserve notes aren't money. And things that are safe and sound are money, and that's gold and silver, and now it looks like Bitcoin. And it's an amazing song. And you should go and listen to it. I think she has commercialized it, so it helps support Elaine Diane Taylor, and she writes a lot of really good songs. We still have about 13 minutes, so we can... Let's, before we go to the last two people, I want to also brag a little bit about Drew Lamb and Chuck Horton. We were one of the first media outlets that we're aware of. I mean, there was a few others before us, but we were maybe the second or third, maybe fourth generation of this story. We were calling attention to the fact that six bankers had died kind of mysteriously or unexpectedly, I guess would probably be the best word. And we continued to talk about that for 2 or 3 weeks, and that was way back towards the beginning of last year. By the end of the year, that number reached, wait for it here now, 36 bankers died. That's three a month on average through 2014. And these are all people that died before they should have. Some of them had health problems, supposedly. Some of them tripped and fell out of seven-story windows, threw themselves off bridges. It's kind of bizarre, but they were all considered accidental or suicide. I just think that's kind of a very strange coincidence that 36 people are involved in a financial industry that's basically smoke and mirrors this time. It's full of criminals. I think people that have a lot to lose are trying to destroy evidence at this point in time, and those people represented evidence with what they knew, so they had to be destroyed. So that's another warning out there to all you people working in these status industries, and you think that you're keeping your family safe by not reporting what you know and not blowing the whistle and continuing to draw your paychecks so you can make your house payment. You are going to someday find yourself washing up on the shore of some river because you know something that they can't afford someone else to find out. If you know of a criminal activity, you need to report it, because if knowing something and keeping it secret doesn't protect you at all, it actually makes it more assuredly that you're going to die accidentally, unexpectedly.
So Chuck, really quick, I've got some breaking news here. I can't reveal the source, but it just came into me. Siskiyou Sheriff's Department destroyed 14 years of records, destroyed all criminal and non-criminal reports for the time period of 1991 to 2004, according to a statement made by County Counsel Brian Morris in a recent court filing. The Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors approved the sheriff's application to destroy the records. Now, what the heck is that all about? That is very odd.
This is so bizarre. Yeah. In the age of computers, when you can scan a document, and you could probably scan a 10 by 10 room full of documents and put it on a device that fit in the palm of your hand, why do you destroy anything?
Because something needed to be hidden.
Yeah, I guess.
And what was that?
Probably something that was incriminating the sheriff.
Yeah.
That's be my guess.
Yeah, inquiring minds want to know. Well, there you have it.
You always kind of want to go to the person who's going to benefit most from that action. That's probably where you'll find the smoke.
Right. Yeah. Well, sorry to interrupt you. That just came
out. That's great. So that's actually really great. Wow. And that's what happens.
We're going to need to dig into this.
Well, we have a few more minutes. This thought pops into my head, and I don't know if any of this is true. This is my random thought. And so I have no evidence. I'm just saying things that occur to me. It's very much possible that when someone gets into a position of maybe a sheriff or whatever, that in order to control him and get him to do what they want him to do, the people that are really running the system, they compromise him by getting him involved in something that's kind of not quite so legal. And then they have control over him by telling him, so we want to do what we want you to do here. We're going to bring that up. So he may be getting them off his back by clearing that information out. Yeah. He regretted doing it, didn't want to be, and it's a scandal he doesn't want to have happen to him. He just wants to get rid of it. I've met Sheriff Lopey. He's a decent guy. We disagree on a lot of stuff, but I don't think he's a tyrant.
He is a statist for sure.
Well, but he thinks that the government still can lead to freedom. I think he's just mistaken in his philosophy. He wants to be free, but he's on the wrong road. I'll put it that way.
Well, and some of these guys think that they're constitutional, and when it comes down to it, they really aren't. You know, I was mm-hmm. really surprised in an interview with Sheriff Gilbertson out of Josephine County, or I guess former Sheriff Gilbertson. You know, he was really for having all that military gear, and talked about needing that sort of thing for continuity of government. I think he had any idea that my head just exploded when he said that. I was completely freaking out. And by the way, that was Riggins, not Lopey, that did that.
Oh, Riggins.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, lots of info here.
Yeah, well, whoever did it, that could be a possible scenario. I don't know.
So we've got a couple more minutes here.
Well, before we reveal the number one show, I want to bring up two more names real quick that I thought were really surprised to me, and that's Christopher Cantwell and Tony Bones. And Tony Bones was actually on two different shows. Christopher Cantwell was on one. And the thing about these people that really impressed me is how much they were trying to dedicate living their lives to the principles that they believe in. And Drew is a lot like that too. And that's what I really admire about Drew, is that he has certain principles in his life, and he tries to live every day by those principles. And it's really hard to do. And so people that do that, they get a great deal of admiration from me. And I think both those individuals do. And I don't always agree with Christopher Cantwell and everything he does. I think sometimes he's a little abusive to people because that's his style. But I still think he's an amazing intellect, and he's trying to be the person that he talks about that he wants to be, and I appreciate that. And then Toni Bones, wow, she has so much courage. She's dirt poor, and she's willing to be on work patrols and whatever. She's not going to pay a fine because she doesn't agree with paying a fine for that. She will do whatever she can to keep from taking money away from her children, raising her children. So she puts herself into all sorts of things because she's not going to pay a fine to support an illegal system. And I have a lot of admiration for people like that. Okay, number one show, drum roll. I think we both agree on this. This person was just amazing. This was Drew's guest. He got her on the show. And Drew, I'll let you take over.
Oh, well, that was Julia Toriansky, a.k.a. Brave the World.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a YouTuber, anarcho-capitalist activist, I guess is what you'd call her, and a huge promoter of Bitcoin. And You know, and I think that Julia really represents things to come. You know, she's what I think that, well, she's younger than I am. So she's, you know, I think she's the generation, I'm Generation X. I think she's like whatever generation's behind me. I don't know why or why not. I don't know what they call themselves.
Theoretically,
now,
she could be your daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's really amazing to see how, she and others like her in her generation are adapting and embracing this new system. They are the future. And mm-hmm. and they basically the status system is irrelevant to them, and it's not a matter of having some kind of a violent battle or major revolution or something like that. It's just a matter of just ignoring that system and moving forward with a better, more competitive system, and Bitcoin represents that, and these people are living their life in an absolutely different way. Their means of exchange is completely different. Their values are very different than what most people hold true. And,
yeah. And so, I think it's partly because they haven't been subjected to all the years of I guess normalcy bias that we get subjected to by just existing, you know, from day to day to day, and we just this is how things are. This is how they're going to be. And they say, well, no, we don't want that. And they actually haven't been brainwashed to the extent that someone my age is. It's really a lot harder for someone my generation to break out of that and become activist.
Yeah, and they're comfortable in the digital world. The internet's always been around. They're used to social media, gaming interfaces, things like that. They're used to the virtual world, and so Bitcoin is just I think natural progression for them, and I think she's done a really good job making the case for Bitcoin, and I've seen presentations in the mainstream media with her. She's extremely well spoken, very elegant.
She is, and she did an amazing job. She does all that production on those videos on YouTube herself. That one main thing where she puts all this, she doesn't say a word herself. They're all just clips of other people, and to do that and to bring the message through so clearly through doing that was really a big deal. Yeah, she's an amazing person. Drew, I hear the music.
There we go.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to us today.
Good night.
Have a happy new year. Good night. You're bound to break.